Hi, this is Sam Lagana with the Los Angeles Rams. Whose house? You're listening to the Los Angeles Rams UK podcast. Undenied worldwide. The Los Angeles Rams. It doesn't get any better than this. Let's go Rams.
Hello and welcome to the Los Angeles Rams UK podcast, episode 71. We are here for episode 71, people. We are the NFC champions. We are here. We are one game away. We are in the Super Bowl. Joining me tonight to go through the 2017 beautiful victory against the Niners is John. How are you, my friend?
How you doing, Chris? Good evening. Thanks for having me on. And I'm sitting here pinching myself because did that really happen on Sunday night?
It definitely did, my friend. It definitely did. And Andy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Chris. A bit like John, I'm still sort of, did I dream that the other night or was it real?
It was definitely real, gentlemen. It was definitely real. And we will go through it in fine detail in just a second. We will obviously cover off that game as we usually would do. Obviously talk about any news that's come out the back of that. There's been quite a few things come out recently in the last 24, 48 hours that we'll go through. We are thank you as always. We've got some social media questions, a couple of things to obviously discuss at the back end and then discuss. Not fully discussed the big one as of yet, because we'll let you know obviously what we're going to be doing next week as well. So I had to make a decision here, gentlemen, who I was going to give the question to first. So I'll go with you, John. Talk me through your emotions on Sunday evening.
I'm not ashamed to say this. I may have cried at the end. I may have cried, yes. Throughout the whole game, I felt like once we went up with a gay kicking, you know, with essentially the game-winning field goal, I felt like if there's a turnover still in this game, and once that happens, I'm probably going to drop to the deck. Like, and I did, like, that last minute and 46, I was on my feet in front of the TV, and you know, and when that, you know, basket tipped and was intercepted, I dropped to my knees and just put my hands like, and like my head in my hands, like, I can't, it's, oh my god, it's happened. And like, you know, just tears were like just coming. I honestly couldn't believe it.
I'm like, getting a bit choked up now. Stop it.
And then I ran straight to the kitchen and grabbed my bottle of whiskey and pulled myself a large whiskey.
Love that.
I don't even drink whiskey. That's the best bit.
I don't know if it was about you saying for yourself, John, as well as Andy, but it was also the realisation when we got the pick to actually figure out, and I spoke to someone else about this, we'll go into a few things of how things have blown up for us this week as well in being asked to do things, but it took me probably 15, maybe 20 seconds to actually work out what was going on in the game, to actually figure out that we didn't need to make another play.
Yeah.
Andy, talk to me.
A bit like John, to be honest, but, you know, I'm not going to be ashamed to say there were one or two dusty eye moments.
Got a bit smoky, yeah?
Yeah, got a bit smoky in the house. Unbelievable. We at one point, we were starting to look like we were down and out, and again, we just dug deep and got into it and won, and it was just an absolutely awesome feeling. I think straight away, I'd had maybe one or two drinks too many, and I was sort of thinking, how much is it to go to LA for the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think I've googled that and looked at that too many times this week, if I'm truthfully honest with you. I need to stop doing it to myself.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll come into the game again properly in a moment, and we will go through everything as much as we can, but one question I've got for both of you now, and you've both said that the emotions were running high, we obviously did what we did. Does this feel different than the last time we got to the Super Bowl, John?
Yes. The last time we got to the Super Bowl, obviously beating the Saints in the Superdome, was a hell of an achievement. The Saints absolutely were pounding us in that game, and we rallied well to come back, you know, obviously, and win. But it's purely because of who it is we beat to get there for me. Divisional rivals, one of our most fiercest rivals, a team that we've not beaten in 3 years, a team that all they've been doing is running their mouth about how, like, this was the matchup they wanted in the NFC Championship, and they were already talking as if they'd one hand in the Lombardi already. So it meant more to be quite frank, shut them up and send them home.
Andy?
Yeah, like John said, you know, it's a fact that, you know, we beat the Niners, or, you know, especially after all their mouthing off this week, you know, or last week, we should say now, you know, basically, oh, we're going to win it. You're not going to do anything, you know, and it wasn't just beating the 49ers. It was beating the Cardinals as well. You know, yeah. We beat the Cardinals, we beat the Bucks, and then we beat the 49ers. You know, just something about this one just felt a little different. And I suppose, you know, you've also got to acknowledge some of our players are getting older now. So the likes of AD's now in his 30s, you know, and it would be, you know, a shame for him to end his career. You know, we don't know how long he's going to last, you know, without a ring. So, you know, just for the players, if nothing else, for some of the players on there, for how hard they've worked to be able to get the chance to go and, you know, win it.
Definitely, definitely. And I think I'm probably with you there. Obviously, I've got a personal sort of family connection, obviously, with the last time we got there with my brother-in-law being a Saints fan and sticking it to them. But I think you mentioned there, John, obviously, we were being hammered in that game. But when you actually watch the game and to get your feeling on this, gentlemen, watching the game on Sunday, it felt like we were actually struggling at parts. But when you actually go back at it, and I think that's the emotion when you're in it, it felt like they were on top. But when you go back and watch it again, and then you actually look at the stats, we were actually on top a lot of the game, and but it just didn't feel like that. Andy, do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm just having a look at the stats now myself, and, you know, we dominated, you know, pretty much everything, yeah. Time of possession, everything. It's just, I think some of it is just that because they've beaten us for the, you know, the past 3 years, once they went ahead, I think a lot of people are like, oh, here we go again. You know, it's the Niners again. You know, they're our bogey team. You know, there's no doubt about it. They've become our bogey team. But, you know, as you say, yeah, some of it probably is the emotions. And as I say, because of the previous record.
Just felt to me, John, that it just had that feeling of, oh, no, not again, exactly as Andy said there. And until there was that little flick of a switch, and that was how it just felt for me. Yourself?
Yeah, like as soon as they took the lead, you know, all the way up to into the fourth quarter before I'd be starting to mount our comeback, I'm sitting there and I'm kind of thinking to myself, look, what's it going to take to beat this team? Because, you know, we had a few weeks ago, we started off great, and then all of a sudden, foot off the gas, and then they just ran away with it. And it felt as if, like, they weren't going to run away with it, but they were going to keep enough control that we weren't going to catch them even. And it was one of the ones I thought, like, even with a fourth quarter comeback, you know, they might just still, you know, pip us here, especially, you know, with Gould. But, you know, obviously he didn't get a chance to, like, kick any field goals, I guess. No. But I think it's one of those ones, like, and yeah, I know, like, against the Bucks, obviously, like, we almost did in Atlanta and ourselves. But I think it's one of the ones that we've kind of, over the last month, you know, we've shown that we can be clutch in that last quarter. We can mount that comeback if we have to. And it just seemed to be a case. Well, I think it was Ramsey that said it not before the game, but in the run-up to the game, about we've got our game plan. We're sticking to it for 60 minutes. Nothing's changing. That's our game plan. We're sticking to it. And it's almost as if, you know, perhaps the guys have faith in what they were going out to do. And it was just a matter of time. We'll find that gap. We'll find that play. And we'll start, you know, getting back into the game. And that's how I perceived it, is that they did stick. You know, and there was negatives, like, in terms of the defense, that they were heavily targeting Reader and Williams a lot. But it's one of those ones elsewhere. A lot of the guys were, like, you know, kind of like stepping up to try and limit whatever damage they could do to us. Like, for example, the last time they came to SoFi a few weeks ago, they really utilized the quick toss and it destroyed their run defense. Whereas this time, it didn't matter what they did on the ground, they just couldn't seem to get past the line of scrimmage, you know, a lot of the times. So it was one of the things, like, I'm actually curious to know how we've had weeks where we've went on, like, our run defense is poor, we need to be stronger, we need to be sharper, we need to be better there. Whereas now it's like our run defense is, you know, got to be up there. It's one of the best in the league somehow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what's changed, and I'm desperate to know. What have they adapted, especially on that line? Is it maybe a case that it's Greg Gaines or whatever, do you know?
That was going to be one of my. So we've got a question further on down the line, and obviously to go through it, but the guy's shown up, hasn't he, when he's effectively had to fill in as such, and he may have obviously been that missing piece, but to their big game, and it's no sort of hidden fact, is that Shanahan is about, he wants the 30 runs, doesn't he? If he can get to 30 runs, they will win the game. And I think that had obviously in the coaching rooms and when they'd obviously looked at it on tape is what they'd actually concentrated on. They do not reach that number. And to restrict them to 20 rushing attempts and only 50 yards, if you look back at the game a couple of weeks before, it, as you say, complete opposites. And it just shows that, and I said this again the other day, and it shows actually to me that for something that we've been speaking about for a few weeks of McVay actually, Ramsey saying we've got a game plan, but it actually to me, it shows that McVay's actually potentially changed his game plan and actually potentially changed game plans during a game. Because we've always just been one straight down the line and quite stubborn and quite arrogant maybe in some ways to it. But in this game, it felt like something had changed, and we all obviously seen the footage of AD on the touchline giving the defense a right good telling that this is what we're going to do. And that, to me, was just a phenomenal show of how much of a captain that guy is, for him then to do what he did there on the touchline, to tell people what he was going to do, but then actually go and do it himself and show them this is how I want us all to do it. And I think that was the attitude for me, was this game now means it. Let's go and win it. Andy, yourself?
Yeah, no, I think for me it was, you know, AD, you know, doing exactly what you want. You know, he's not one of them. I don't think he's very vocal unless he needs to be. He likes to, you know, leave it to, seems to be more Ramsey's the vocal one of the two. But, you know, him standing there, getting them all around and basically, you know, sticking a rocket up the backside seemed to, after that, the defense seemed to step up another level. You know,
it was phenomenal to see. And I'm actually really glad that Fox picked it up.
Yeah, same.
Because that, you know, could have been missed. But how they picked it up and shown it, I'm not quite sure if it was shown in the stadium. It'd be very interesting to see if that was ever put up on the big screen. Might have been, I don't know what the if they're showing the same footage or what, but that definitely gave me a boost and I wasn't even in the stadium.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was good to see, you know, your captains and your big star players, you know, stepping forward when they need to and basically getting a hold of them and saying, right, this is what we need to do. Let's get it done. It's got to be on us now. Definitely. You know, let's stop this. But, you know, like I say, we went in with a good game plan this time, which was if you stop the run, stick it on, you know, what we've all been saying, stop the run, get it on Jimmy G. Yeah. You know, you've got a chance because, to be honest, Garoppolo reminds me a lot of Goff. When everything's going well and the play calling's going perfect and everything's, he looks a very good quarterback. When the pressure's put on him and it's right, it's down to you and your arm, that's when the mistakes happen and that's when you've got that chance to beat this team. You know, if you'd have said to me before the start of the game, we'd have held the 49ers to what, 50 yards running? I'd have been like, you're having a laugh. We ain't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think what we've been doing, I think I've noticed, is we're using our linebackers more and our safeties to push the line on first and second downs more, to sort of put the extra bods in to try and stop that run. Because if you look quite a few times, you know, it was Weddle making the tackles. You know, you had Reader and Jones flying into the gaps, you know. So I think that's something that we've, you know, have adapted to, is, you know, we need to somehow, and that's just how we're doing it, is by, you know, letting those players get up to the closest to the line and then sort of run the gaps as soon as the ball snapped.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, sometimes that works. You know, you can occasionally get caught out if everyone's going up the inside and they run it off to the outside. But if you get it right, you know, you are limiting them to, you know, 1 yard or stopping them at the line of scrimmage straight away. Definitely. Yeah, I think that's where we've adapted a little bit, is we've gone, okay, we can't do it with a front four. We just don't have the bods. So let's put five on the defensive line, or, you know, we'll have the four, but we'll get a safety and a linebacker to blitz them as well. You know, but it's not a blitz to, it's not a traditional pass blitz. It's a run blitz, basically, to stop them dead where we are.
And you mentioned about a tackle, and you mentioned about potentially the running game, which was well, has predominantly within their running game been Deebo Samuel. So, John, there was one tackle on Mr. Samuel that I think a piece of his soul was taken.
Was that? I must have missed that. I've not seen anything in social media the last few days. You know, I've not seen countless retweets or anything of a video of, you know, Mr. Nicholas Scott, you know, really decapitating him.
Now, there has been a lot of memes, GIFs, lots of things going around social media. But on a serious note, that has got to have taken something out of him. Because that was some hit, and a legal hit at that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, you know, it wasn't just that hit. If you actually watch it, I think, on the kickoff to start the second half, Okoronkwo lit him up as well. And then I think it was later in the third quarter, Weddle also lit him up. It sort of just, you know, that Garoppolo played a pass to him. It went over him, but because Weddle was coming in, he'd already sort of lit him up as well. So I think by the end of it, I don't think we actually saw much of him after that. I think that was a case of, you know what, I can't do this anymore. But, you know, I think a hit like that probably, I think, may have just put that little thing in the back of his mind that actually, you know what, I better be careful here because these guys are going to light me up, you know, and I don't think he was too keen on that.
Fair dues to him for getting up, because there's many a wide receiver and running back within the NFL that would not have come up on that, and they'd have been going off on a cart. Mm. And watching the footage, and they came away from it, and you're thinking, oh God, this is a bad one. But fair dues to him, he did get up and walk off the field. So,
yeah.
But Nick Scott, for me, had a game again. I think he was, again, done his job exactly how you wanted him to do it.
Yeah, he was. You know, he did exactly what he's done. You know, I've been quietly impressed with him throughout the season, to be honest. You know, when he's needed to step up, he's, you know, stepped up and made the plays, you know, that we need him to do. You know, fair play to the guy, you know. You know, not just as well on, you know, on special teams as well. You know, he's mm-hmm. always there on special teams. He's always doing the job. And, you know, he's one that, you know, there's a new number of players, I think, on there who, you know, are unsung hero, so to speak, for the team this year, because they've had to step in through injuries and, you know, have done well for us, you know. But yeah, I've been pleasantly surprised with Nick Scott. I was always a little bit wary of him, but, you know, I'm beginning to slowly convert to him now.
John, there was a couple of others who were the unsung heroes. There's a guy called Cooper Kupp. He's turned up a bit, I think, this year. And Mr. Beckham. They again, did what it says on the tin and what we knew and know that they can offer, right?
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the ones, if you compare, like, I know Beckham, it was his first game, if I'm right, against the 49ers. Like, if you look back at over the course of the three games, you know, our passing game couldn't really utilise both of them and all their talents that they can give us. Whereas, you know, on Sunday there, like, we had a passing game, and from the off, we utilised Beckham, and it's one of those ones, as the season's gone and now we've gone to postseason, you know, like, I don't care what the guy's now making out of, like, bonuses for how far we're getting. The guy is earning every penny that the Rams are giving him, and it's one of those ones, from what's now being reported, we are really, really keen on trying to keep him. And it's one of those ones, like, I think he's proven that he's still the wide receiver he was at the Giants. He's still capable of, you know, getting the yards, making the plays, that he's always been able to. And I think it's one of the ones he's shut up a lot of, you know, critics and pundits that have said, oh, he's been a cancer. The man isn't a cancer. You know, he's a solid player. He's happy to be in LA, and he's really contributed. And that's not to say if he wasn't there, you know, and like Robert Woods didn't get injured, that he wouldn't contribute to the same level. It's just one of the ones that, with what happened to Woods, I'm grateful that we had already had someone in who was able to not necessarily fill in his shoes, but just step up to fill a gap that we were all devastated, because even up to that point, I think a lot of people were feeling that we're one injury away from our season being derailed, and then Woods got injured, and we're like, oh, great. Whereas, you know, Beckham's been, you know, a great addition to the roster. But then you've got Cooper Kupp, who, you know, as simple as this for me, he has to be awarded MVP. He has to, because I think it's an absolute travesty and it's a disgrace to the game if they're going to give it to someone like Aaron Rodgers or a quarterback, give it to Brady because he's now retired. You know, Cooper Kupp is, I think it's something like he's 156 yards away from, I think, having the all-time from, you know, regular season right through to Super Bowl, the all-time, like, yards received record. He's that far. I think he's only something like 40 yards off of becoming second. So there's a good chance in a Super Bowl he'll, you know, I don't know, I've not seen who it is that's on the list. I think it's, I know Larry Fitzgerald has the all-time record for postseason, but I don't know if it's his record that Kupp is able to actually take. But that moment where he made that catch and he just like looked up at the roof and roared, like Kupp isn't, I don't think I've ever seen that before. No, and Seaman, I think when I seen him do that, it was like that roar, it was like, it's almost like we're going to do this. This is, you know, because I think he did that on the play that essentially led to Gay kicking the game winning field goal. I think it was about maybe three or four plays away from that. But for him to do that, it was like, these guys are still going. They have the belief they want this. This is how much it means to them. Just like you're saying with like AD, with his pep talk on the sidelines and whatnot. These guys wanted to win. This wasn't just any game to them. It was so much more, and it was, you know, it was just amazing to see how much it meant to a lot of guys, and especially Kupp.
Definitely, and a shout out, I suppose. I think for me, definitely, he deserves a shout out, and he showed up again in the previous game was Kendall Blanton. When Tyler Higbee goes off again, you feel that sort of knot in your stomach. Oh no, the cogs are coming off. There's something. Someone's gone off the field that's actually a massive impact on the way we play the game. But Andy, for the way he turned up and the way he received the ball.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't just how he received the ball. It was the fact that he, you know, the blocking more than anything else. You know, quite a few times he was, you know, blocking up Nick Bosa, which, you know, is no easy task even for a lineman. You know, and he was holding them. You know, so he came in and did a really solid game. And, you know, when he has had to come in the team, you know, he has been solid for us, you know. So I was really, really enjoyed seeing him doing it. And, you know, as I say, these are the sort of players, like I said earlier, are the unsung heroes who are stepping in when there's been injuries and stuff, you know, who've come in and just quietly got on with the job and, you know, made it look reasonably seamless that, you know, yeah, we've probably missed a little bit of Higbee. He adds that little bit extra to the game, but he wasn't as badly missed as you initially thought he was going to be. You know, as I said, when he went down initially, it was, oh God, here we go. What's going to happen now?
Yeah.
You know, that's it. You know, especially as we only had one, you know, we had only dressed two tight ends as well. You're starting to think, you know, what are we going to do? You know, but, you know, the guy came up clutch and, you know, fair play to them, you know, and hopefully, you know, Higbee will be back. But if not, you know, you feel confident that with him in there that he'll still get the job done for us.
No, definitely. And I was watching the game at the time, watching it again on Scout with my brother, and I think we've got to stick to that tradition for the Super Bowl because it seems to have worked the last two games. But I was kind of explaining to him, because he's slightly newer to the game, is that Blanton John to come in and done what he done, he wouldn't have got that many snaps in practice or even at any point theoretically through the season. To actually come in and go ahead with the game plan, as we've said, shows as well the maturity and the knowledge that he has got for the plan that we're undertaking.
Yeah, like, and the what Andy said about like the blocking that, I think it was actually a few times he put Bosa on his arse, basically. Like, he really stepped up, and like from my perspective, like, where this guy's came from, like, can we check, see if there's any more like him there? Because he's came in, he's done a great job. The flea flicker as well, you know, when that play, you know, started to unfold, I thought, oh, great. It's going, this is where, like, it's going to be an interception or something like that, and it's going to be like, oh, what are we trying this, like, daft stuff for? But, like, the kind of, like, the balls of him to like step up and help a play with that when, like you're saying, the amount of snaps he's probably been getting in practice and whatnot, you know, with Stafford and whatnot, it's probably been quite limited. Like, yeah, the guy didn't look out of place, which was amazing, you know. And I think it was one of the ones that I was saying, like, I really hoped he got a game ball for it, because his performance was like one of the best in the team, considering the spot and the roster he normally fills. And that's not to take anything away from anyone else. It's just like he's one of the ones that really stepped up out of nowhere in that game.
It's interesting that you haven't seen the in-dressing room speech from McVay after this game, because I think obviously with the razzmatazz that goes around with getting the trophy that he didn't want to touch, by the way. I don't know if anybody noticed that. And in the interviews after the game, he was not interested in that NFC Championship trophy. He wants the other one, which is fantastic to see. But it'd be good to know if who got the game balls and after the game, because it's good to see that video sometimes that they're in the changing room. And again, we've seen them in that room have the conversations that we're not done yet and let's keep going.
Yeah, I never actually seen the championship trophy getting presented, because Game Pass cut the feed as soon as the game finished.
Yeah, so they handed it over. The Fox presenter was on the stage, give it to Sam Kroenke first, who then obviously went to hand it to McVay, and he just didn't want to touch it. He took it and handed it straight off, and Stafford took it off him. He kind of was saying, I don't want, that's not the one I'm after. And he actually said that to Sam Kroenke, which I think just shows the way his thinking is, that he's not done. He is after the big one. And that, to me, I really hit home to me, that one, that the it's not about getting to this point and then see what happens in the next game. The plan was always to get to where we are.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think the reason why we haven't seen the video is I watched the press conferences live after they happened, and you could actually hear the music in the press room coming from the dressing room, and the screaming and the shouting. So I think that might have something to do with why they have not put the video out, I think.
The Instagram lives were pretty comical to watch.
Oh, yes.
Some of the players
were
after the game. That's always interesting to see.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple of other people, and you mentioned him. I can't remember which one of you guys it was that mentioned him. Obviously, that the winning points obviously came from Matt Gay, which, for what again he's done this season for us to get us in some of the positions we're in, is phenomenal. And actually, to step up and do that when he'd also already missed a field goal. Yes, it was from 54, but again, I didn't feel any sort of, as he steps up to the ball, you got the confidence that he's going to put it over the sticks, right, John?
Yeah. Like last night, I actually sat and watched the coach's film. So I watched the 40-minute highlight and the coach's film, because his coach's film gives you good angles like that you don't see from like TV coverage. And when he missed the field goal, he kind of just like, as if like, shrugged his shoulders like, oh well, and moved on. Like, a lot of the kickers, especially in games like that, it would, you know, get to their heads, but he's just kind of like, no, on to the next one. I'll make the next one. And obviously, the next one was the game-winning one. I've sang his praises a lot. You know, I call him Money Matt and whatnot. And it was one of those ones, like, I'm kicking myself for this, because I actually predicted 2017 to the Rams, Matt Gay kicking the game-winning field goal. Like, where I appeared on at the 2 feet inbounds last week against another 49ers fan. He said 2017 with Gould kicking the wing, giving me a winning field goal. And I said to him, like, nah, no chance, Matt Gay for the win. And it's
so
one of the ones.
I'm, so you bet
no,
on that, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm killing myself for it. So
obviously,
like,
we don't promote gambling, but
no, absolutely not. And if you do, bet responsibly, folks. but no, the point I'm making is that through the season, Matt Gay has been a constant when we've needed him to step up and kick, you know, at any field goal, regardless of whether it's a game winner or not, he's done it. You know, and I mean, he done it against the Bucks, and he's done it this week as well. We've got confidence in a kicker that when we need him to do it, he can step up and do it. And it's one of those ones, like, if he's got to do it in a couple of weeks' time, like, I've no doubts he'll make it. The thing is that Matt Gay has shown that it's unfortunate he missed the one, because it's from a distance that he normally would make. I don't know if it's just one of the ones his reaction is if, like, I didn't connect with the ball correctly. You know, it's almost as if as soon as he kicked it, he knew, like, it's away. He knew himself, you know. Because there's ones where he's kicked from over 50 and there's been enough height in the ball that could have went for another good 10, 20 yards. So he's capable of, you know, kicking it probably from anywhere, I'd say, well, within reason, on the field. But, you know, it's great having someone like him, like when it comes down to like such an important moment that, you know, when the snap, as long as the snap's good, there's a good, what, 90% chance it's, you know, going through the sticks.
Yeah, definitely. And what we've got there is what we've obviously been looking for since obviously Greg Zuerlein left, and what he's actually now doing himself is probably the reason of why he left, because obviously people seen that it wasn't going to be as going the way it wanted to anyway. But a few other points that I wanted to raise, gents, and then if anything I've missed, please do shout. Matthew Stafford. We obviously went all in to get Matthew Stafford. I don't think we would be potentially in this position if he wasn't our quarterback at the moment. But Andy, as that ball sails it sails 40 yards and the guy stood there and he takes it in on his chest on his numbers and then it bounced out of his hands and goes on the floor. I think that probably was the biggest emotional side for me of, oh my God, there's that pass again.
Yeah, but that's that bit of luck that you need sometimes to win these sorts of games. You know, I think that had been intercepted, that was game. That would have been it, game over. But, you know, again, we brought Stafford in for the clutch fourth quarter moments, which, you know, he's pretty famous for, you know, his fourth quarter performances, last 2 minutes, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, that's the sort of games that he comes in for. And I think he proved it again. You know, he went down, he got us to the position to get that field goal, you know, but at the beginning of the game, when he threw that first interception, I don't know about anybody else, but I sort of had this feeling of, oh, are we going to get that Stafford today? You know, the one that we've seen a few times over, you know, the last few weeks of the season, you know, 2-3 interceptions a game and not looking like he could, you know, get the job done, you know, and I was just like, oh, is this going to be the Stafford? Are we getting the Hyde Stafford today? But, you know, he came up clutch when we needed him to again, you know, and he's done that a couple of times now this year. And like I say, the interception, I think, whether or not the DBs probably thought, I can't believe this is going to go, the easiest catch I'm ever going to have in my life, interception, and he's took his eyes off the ball a little bit. Or, you know, it's just sometimes that little bit of luck that you just need that gets you to where, you know, you need to be. You know, and in seasons past, we probably wouldn't have had that luck, whereas this year we have.
Definitely not. And I was having I said earlier, we've been quite lucky to obviously be asked to speak on various different things already this week. And I think it will probably get even more next week with everybody wanting a piece of the Rams. And we will always happily take the conversations with anybody to speak about the Rams. So I was on YouTube yesterday, I think it was yesterday, with Jeff Reinfeld, who obviously is off the Sky coverage. And he mentioned about that play, and I said, I think it that may have an effect on that player potentially for the next 3, 6, could be 12 months, because that will haunt him to effectively, he may put it on his shoulders that's why they lost the game. But
I think he actually came out and said that, Chris. He actually blames himself for losing the game.
But you do worry for that, and that's where obviously the psychologist will obviously have to do some work on him on that. But then we had the same sort of situation, John, where the same thing happened to Jalen Ramsey when he gets the ball, it hits him right on the chest and bounces off. Again, that was the game there.
Yeah. Well, I think this is where, like, it's really your luck in that, because Ramsey's been able to look back and joke and go, well, I dropped one too. But it's one of the ones, if it was the other side of the coin, then, you know, then you've got Jalen Ramsey then potentially, you know, being psychologically affected. That could have been the game. That could have been what sent us to the Super Bowl. So it's one of those ones, like, got to kind of ride your luck with some things, and, like, you know, with them dropping, like, one right, that's it couldn't have been a more perfect pass to pick off. Yeah. I guess it's our luck. We'll ride our luck and take that. I think when Howard actually made, you know, the game win, the game sealing pick, I think my worry was someone's going to tackle him here and he'll fumble it and he'll get the ball back. And somebody did tackle him, but thankfully it was one of our own players who tackled him, saying, like, get your ass in the ground. No,
yeah. Get down.
Get down before you lose it. Like, he's, you know, Howard's picked it, and he's obviously, I want to go for the end zone and seal this, you know, with a pick six. But, You know, it's like, no, get down. We've won the game.
That was Greg Gaines, I think.
I think it was Gaines. So Gaines had the most important tackle in the whole game.
I love that. His most important tackle is on one of his own. And you obviously say about Greg Gaines there, but his lineman buddy in Mr. Aaron Donald for the chase on Garofalo to obviously get that pick at the end. Again, epitomised the man and what Garofalo was trying to do, I'm not quite sure. And it was an ugly pass, which we knew obviously was going to come from him. And as the ball bumps up into the air, Andy, what are you thinking? Did everything kind of go in slow motion?
Yeah, pretty much. And then I saw sort of Howard coming for it. And I was like, please, just get it. Yeah, I think luckily Howard's a converted safety to linebacker. So, you know, you're kind of wishing, you know, you can catch a ball, hopefully, with any luck, you know. Yeah. But it was that few seconds. You saw it go up and you're like, is he? And then, yeah, I erupted in cheers when he caught it. And I was like, that's it, you know. Job done. We've done this now. You know, bar a complete and utter disaster, we've won this. You know, but again, it was just, you know, luck, you know, that player, you know, to be honest, their player could have caught that, you know, it was within his hands. He could have easily have caught it, you know. I still think that would have been game at that point, but I think Garoppolo was just panicked at that point. He knew it was, you know, he had to try something and it just...
Well, I think it was the fact that it was obviously it was third down or fourth down or wherever we were.
Yeah,
he'd also had three incompletions, obviously, on the bounce as well, hadn't he? So the pressure was seriously on. And that's, like you said earlier, that's what the game plan that we had to do. And it's what I spoke about with someone before the game. That was had to be our game plan. Was we had to have a game plan for Deebo Samuel, which it looked like we did. We had to also make sure that the ball stayed with Jimmy G as much as possible to make him make the decisions. And in the end, that was what came to us.
Yeah, it like I said earlier, it reminded me so much of Goff, you know, that he would make that bonehead mistake and, you know, throw it away or, you know, try and make something happen out of nothing. And, you know, he'd be the one that would be intercepted and that would cost us the game. Whereas I think with Stafford, I think we saw it. He took, I think, a sack rather than trying to throw it away because he realised, I'm not going to get it. I'm taking a chance. Do you know what? Bosa can sack me and, you know, we'll move on to the next play rather than trying to squeeze something out. And I think that is one of the differences between, like I said before, Goff and Stafford. Is, all right, Stafford can occasionally make the wrong choices, but I do wonder if some, you know, a lot of his balls, you know, like the one that nearly got intercepted, normally he's got the power to make that and get it over his head. So there is that wonder, has the season took its toll on him a little bit and maybe he can't quite throw it as much. You know, he's had numerous back injuries and stuff throughout the season. You know, well, maybe that's just affecting his throw mechanics and he's not being able to get it as deep as he normally can. So, but again, you look at it, Stafford takes the ball and goes with it and runs off and gets the first down. He looked at, you know, he watched the field and he's done that a few times over the last few weeks. It looks like he's evolved himself as well. He's gone, you know what, I'm making too many silly things. Right, you know what, there's 6-7 yards in front of me. I'll just go and run it and get it myself and then move on to the next play.
And exactly as you say, yeah, he's apt to do that, hasn't he? Which is also the fact that the defensive line isn't ready for that because that's not what he does. So it takes it out of their hands effectively because it's something that they haven't really planned for. So have I missed anything?
Just to add on to what Andy's saying there, like Stafford's decision making has kind of really improved. He's still prone to, you know, mistakes, you know, like looking for a Hollywood pass or whatever. But, you know, not every quarterback's perfect. And it's one of those ones, like you're saying yourself, Chris, like we wouldn't be where we are right now without Matt Stafford as our quarterback. And that's how he's been the final kind of key on the offense to unlock the likes of what Kupp is capable of and allow other guys like Van Jefferson, for me, has been great this season, you know, in his second year with us. And then obviously we've had Beckham in as well. Higbee's been great as well. We've really been able to showcase how good our offense actually can be. And it's down to him being on the team. You know, he's so the kind of plays he's been able to run, the kind of passes he's been able to, you know, throw, has allowed guys to get into the positions they've wanted to be in to then be able to make big plays for us. Whereas you go back 12 months, Goff isn't that kind of quarterback. He's not anywhere near what Stafford is. And you know, I know Stafford's been around for 13 years, so he's got, you know, he's the veteran, he's got the experience. That may be the case, but for where our kind of franchise is wanting to go, it's quarterbacks of Stafford's caliber. We need under center, calling the plays and making the plays and allowing our guys to go out there and showcase what they can do. So it's one of those ones, like there's been, let's say there's been times where I've been critical of Hollywood passes or a bit of decision making, but Stafford's a quarterback that he can get back up, he can, you know, just dust off his shoulders and just, you know, like you're saying, on to the next play, rather than dwelling on the previous play, which is what we've had before. So, you know, his role in this offense has been, you know, one of the kind of the key factors on getting us to where we are now. And it's one of those ones, like, it's great for him that he's found, like, back a couple of weeks, great for him he got his first win in the playoffs. It's now great for him that he's now won his first NFC Championship, and you know, fingers crossed for a couple of weeks' time. The guy now has the chance to finally shut everyone else up. And myself is including that, because up until we traded for Stafford, you know, they always talk about, oh, he's a great quarterback in a poor franchise, and I never could understand the hype around why this guy was considered to be, you know, great. He was throwing the ball to Megatron, you know, every week. Megatron is an amazing receiver. So it's one of those ones, like, well, let's see how good he is when he's got a good offense and he's not just targeting one guy all the time. And it's one of the ones, like, I'm happy to say that he shot up me and, like, my opinions of him. Like, but he done that very early in the start of the season, and it's just been great to see that, you know, he's had dips, he's been peaks and troughs, he's had his injuries, but I think in most recent weeks, he's shown that, you know, when the chips are down, you know, he's a fantastic quarterback, and, you know, hopefully we get another good few years out of him.
Definitely, definitely. Andy, have I missed anything?
The only thing is, I don't want to end up on a negative, but
we'll go back to John, don't worry.
can we please just maybe ask him to send some of our players in for a bit more of extra tackling practice this week, because the amount of missed tackles was unbelievable. You know, you know some of those runs and stuff, you're looking and you go, you know what, that should have been dead on the line of scrimmage, but you've let him go.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the famous one was, you know, I think Samuel gave Troy Vida a piggyback ride halfway down the field. You know, you think, wrap him up, and, you know, but it wasn't just, you know, not just to point out, it wasn't just Vida. There was quite a number of missed tackles. And, you know, you're thinking at this stage of the season, we were talking about this weeks ago, you know, and it seemed like we started to clean it up, and now it seems to have crept back in again where we're just missing tackles. And, you know, that's probably my biggest negative from this game is, you know, just give them some tackle practice, please, this week.
John, give me a positive.
Well, go back to positive, because I think there is one thing we overlooked, and it wasn't on the field. It was off the field, because I think credit has to go, but it's absolutely due to the crowd who turned out in their droves. You know, when you say Kelly Stafford, I think it was Kevin DeMoff as well, were doing their best to try and get tickets out to people, you know. And it's one of the ones going into the game, all I was seeing was hashtag Redout, hashtag Our House and whatnot. I don't care how many of their claims there was no Redout. And you listen to the game, they're going on conspiracies about, oh, they pumped in, you know, sound and whatnot. Nah, there wasn't as many them as they claim to be there. That was the Rams' house on Sunday.
Definitely.
It was
definitely.
Great here when they had the ball. It was deafening. It was so much more louder. And for me, the best part of it was when they put on the screens to show them all leaving on a mask. So I hope they all beat the traffic. I hope they all got okay. And I'd like to thank them all for all their dollars they spent in there. And also one last thing, I did see there was quite a number of people that made it out from the UK. So I hope everyone that from the UK who got to the game had a great experience, enjoyed it, and got home safely.
No, definitely good shout. Yeah, that was superb, obviously, like you say, to see the stadium. Friend of the show, David Durant, actually, we had a Facebook Live during the fourth quarter, pre-game, during the fourth quarter, and then at the end of the game. So he called me live from the stadium. Couldn't hear a word he was saying. He looked like he was having the best time of his life, which he always seems to anyway. But like you say, the noise was unbelievable. And the guys that obviously travelled over from the UK, follow him on the social medias, very, very jealous. And it, like you say, it's making us look, obviously, for things to come in future. And Tony is adamant that he wants an annual trip. So we'll let the Godfather deal with that one. So watch this space in relation to that going further forward. So we obviously put that one to bed. Now, we obviously will go through a few of the things. Now, normally on normal podcasts, we'd obviously go into the following game. But this week, ladies and gentlemen, we will hold fire on speaking about the following game because we've got a bit of time on our hands. So we will be back next week with another podcast as a pre-show to the Super Bowl. So we'll put a pin in it on that and obviously talk about that as we come into that next week. But coming out of the game, Andy, you saw a few things. Obviously, we obviously understand about Tyler Higbee, but there's been potentially other things. I think we've seen today, obviously, what uniforms the Bengals are going to wear as well.
Yeah, we've seen the uniforms. It looks like we possibly could go for bone and soul look is the favourite at the moment. I think they're expecting us to go with, you know. So, I think we'll wait and see. I don't think it's official. I think it's just what everyone's now expecting us to go with.
Yeah.
So we've got a few injuries we need to be looking at. Higbee, as you say.
Seen a tweet today that come, and I'm not sure how this tweet had found onto my timeline or who'd retweeted it, but it's from a doctor in LA talking about the braces that he could put on his knee. Now, that to me sounds like it's probably a little bit more serious than potentially you first think.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. I did see that myself, actually, and they were basically saying the options are surgery now, but who, you know, is Higbee going to be one of them who wants the surgery, or is he going to push through? You know, I think he's one that if he can get out there and play, even if he can only do 50% of the snaps, he'll want to be there.
Yeah,
you know, so it could be a case of injections, braces, you know, and just basically maybe stick him on a snap count, you know, just so he can experience, you know, being there and, you know, to help, because, you know, I'm sure teams when Higbee are going to play slightly differently to when someone like Kendall Blanton's on the field. You know, he offers that much more. You know, as much as Blanton played well, he offers that little bit more of a threat, I think. So I think he'll be fighting tooth and high water, I think. I would be very surprised if he doesn't make it in some capacity, personally.
No, I agree. John, we obviously there mentioned about the uniforms. We've obviously seen what the Bengals are going to wear. There's been a big call I've seen on Twitter this evening for the retro whites that we've worn this year. I don't see it myself, though, do you?
I'd say never say never. I seen Jordan Rodrigue had confirmed in Kevin DeMoss presser whilst we've been on air here that there's no decision being made yet on it, but there will be in the coming days. Going back to the last time we won the Super Bowl, we obviously wore the throwback. The throwback wasn't our designated home uniform that season. Our designated home uniform technically still was the old Millennium Blue St. Louis colours. Mm-hmm. But that season we elected to go with the road jersey because we changed to White Horns as well. So that was technically our home one, and we wore the throwback as a change. I'm pretty sure, happy for anyone to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure we put in a special request to wear the throwback because technically we should have worn the Millennium Blue and we were granted it. So I know there's been tweets out there saying that no, it'll be Bowen. They're not allowed to wear the white. The Bengals are wearing black. So it's one of those ones, black and white, I guess. Like, there's no like risk of like colour clashes or anything like that. I'd say never personally. I think because of what that jersey represents, I would prefer to wear that one. However, if we were bone, I'd be happy with probably, I'd prefer all bone as opposed to
yeah, I agree.
All.
They've gone for white bottoms though, haven't they?
Yeah, that's going to be the issue. It might be a little bit too close for comfort for the refs, so they may have to go. That's why I think people are saying bone jersey, soul pants is probably the more likely one for them to go with at the moment.
Interesting, interesting. Anything else we've seen on the news? There's been, apparently there's been some various different news stories around the NFL. Someone, some fellas retired that we obviously put him into retirement the previous week. But there's been far too much coverage around that for actually to be more coverage on this podcast.
No.
Yeah, we don't talk about cheats on this podcast.
And then obviously we've had a franchise get a new name today.
Oh, yeah. So
the ex-Washington Redskins, then Washington football team, are now the Washington Commanders. Thoughts on that one?
I'm sorry, but that just seems like a Madden 22 relocation team name. And so do the uniforms. They look like what you get in Madden games on the relocation teams. That's just what they look like. I know a few people have said, oh, I like it. I just think it just sounds and looks too much like a Madden franchise to get in that game.
Is it me or is Washington football team starting to sound like a really good name?
It was.
It like, does now.
It does now, yeah. It sounds very good.
After all the time they've taken, they've picked the name, like...
Well, that's it. I think it was a 2-year discussion of where they were actually going to do it. And then I think they've now shown, as of yesterday, there was a helicopter for the Today programme in America zooming into the offices, and they could see it anyway the day before the release.
You know, I've seen some other names touted along, like Washington Wolves and things like that. That would have had to have been a bet. Wolves, you know, they said, oh, we can't use Wolves because, you know, I think they said it's franchised for somebody else in one of the other leagues, but I'm sure the amount of money they've got, they could have bought the rights to it. You know, that would have been a better name than Commanders.
It is an interesting one to the fact that but they've gone with all the Commanders are based in Washington. It's the capital. It's the Commanders are all in the Pentagon. That's their kind of link, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Tedious link, as I'd like to call it.
Yes.
Good stuff. Right, we'll go over to the socials now. Now, the Godfather himself isn't here today. He wanted a break. He wanted to give himself a little bit of time before we go forward for our pre-Super Bowl podcast. But first question on social media is Tony. How many times, Chris, have you watched the highlights of the NFC Championship game so far this week? I think I'm up to 6. What about yourself?
I've only watched it once, which was today. I watched the 40 minutes today. However, I've watched
I wouldn't
that.
Say I've watched the full things. I've watched various different shows that have showed various different highlight packages.
However, every single tweet I've seen the Nick Scott one, and I've definitely watched that video numerous times.
John, are you in double figures?
No. I just watched, like I said, I watched the coach's film last night and then watched the 40 minutes after it. But I've tried my best to, you know, watch the Nick Scott hit in slow motion as many times as possible. Just in the hope that you can actually see the moment where Deebo Samuel's soul leaves his body.
It was some hit, and I think we will see that. I would probably say it is as good as a hit as Robbie Coleman, and they're both as legal as we've seen.
Yeah.
Next one that came through on Twitter was from @ScotlandRams. I recently asked if Raheem should be retained next year. Has he now earned that chance? Should he not take a head coach's role? Andy?
No, I still want to see him go. I think the defense earlier this year, as much as it stepped up, you wonder how much of that is him and how much of that is just players like Ramsey and Donald stepping forward and taking that lead. I still don't trust him enough. I'd like to see somebody else be given that chance. You know, we went from one of the best open field tackling teams under Staley to probably one of the worst under Morris. You know, there's been too much of a step down. You know, it's always hard to replicate that number one defense year in, year out. But to go from number one to how we were at points in this season was just, it was too painful to watch. And, you know, things I think do need to change there myself still.
John?
I think there's two ways to look at it. If you look at it from, let's take from looking in the not blue tinted specs kind of approach, he's a defensive coordinator who's now going to win the Super Bowl. He was interviewed very early into the postseason. He's maintained his professionalism all the way through. It's one of those ones I'd think it's going to be very unlikely he doesn't get offered the head coach role now, based on itself. Putting the specs back on, be quite happy to still see him go. There was enough through the season for me that I think it was more the players stepping up, the players wanting it more than what he was doing. But going back to what I said earlier on, I would like to know what specifically changed with our run defence, especially like against the 49ers, because it like wasn't what we were seeing, you know, through the course of the season. But as Andy said, you know, open field tackling, like there's a few guys in the roster, you know, Reader especially, I think, needs to kind of go and tackle in 101 again. So I think it would be nice for kind of a fresh approach. But, you know, specs back off, there's a pretty good chance he's going to go anyway, purely because he's now a defensive coordinator that will be in the Super Bowl.
Definitely. And we've obviously seen that he'd been touted, haven't we, for a couple of the jobs. I think Jags was one of them, but it looks like they are leaning more towards Doug Peterson from what I've seen on Good Morning Football this morning. So we'll see what happens. You never know what's obviously going to happen in the NFL. And I don't know, I think you probably could see, if he doesn't take a head coach's role, I think you probably could see him in the position again next season. But like you say, you'd be interesting to know what would change and if things will change. So I think it's a matter of watching this space, isn't it? So I'm going to put a two-pronged attack on this next question. So we have one coming from Daniel Flynn and then from Ben Williams. So Dan said, what, and I'll put it to both of you, what would your chances be of getting up from the Nick the Brick Scott hit? And basically, because of what he's done, and this comes from Ben Williams, do you think he's playing himself into a starting role next year? So, Andy, you tackle both of them first.
I would still be on the floor dead, even now. I don't think I'd even have attempted to move anything just yet, if that was me personally. But that might just be my age, though, as well, coming into that one. As for a starting role next season, I don't see why not. Obviously, you know, a lot can change between now and the start of the season, personnel-wise, but I don't see why, if he keeps doing as he's doing, you know, he can certainly push for that starting rep on the team. You know, at the moment, personally, if it was a choice between me for Brapp or Scott as a starting safety, I think Scott pips it at the moment for me. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit quicker and, you know, he's got that little bit more aggressiveness to him that sometimes you need out of safety.
Definitely. John, two questions to you.
I'm going to answer the second one first. I think there's a pretty good chance he could play himself in a starting role. You know, just similar to what Andy said earlier on, like he's kind of stepped up now and again, like, and he's been a pretty good player, I'd say, for us. So see what happens in the off-season, but there's nothing to say that he couldn't play himself in a starting role. And to go back to about my chances of getting up from the hit, you know the meme from Pulp Fiction, the John Travolta, where he's like looking at us as if like, what's going on? That would be me in the afterlife, looking around asking, what happened? I was just on the field a minute ago. Where am I? That would be me, yeah. There's absolutely no chance. I would probably stay down, you know, if I didn't end up dead from a hit like that.
What about you, Chris?
I wouldn't have. I'd still be stood on my feet. Wouldn't knock me over.
Okay, yeah.
Anyone
listening to the podcast, if you want to see Chris get lit up by a NFL player,
yeah, let's get him up.
Whoa, let's slow this down. Slow this down. Who's in charge here? Dan Flint's actually come back with another question as well, but for me, it kind of has been answered within those two questions as well. What is your favourite play of the conference game?
Oh, yes.
Definitely for me, it's got to be that Nick Scott hit.
Yeah, it's either the Nick Scott hit or, as I said, Okoronkwo lighting him up again at the start of the second half. Those two, I think, they just took him out of the game completely.
Love it. John?
I'm trying not to answer the Nick Scott hit because I think it is the best play of the game. But I think if it was any other player, it would just be, oh, it's just a big hit. But I think it's because it was Deebo Samuel. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, my God, finally. But for me, so we say that's my defensive play. In terms of offensive play, actually, the flea flicker, you know, with Blanton. Nice. absolutely love that, because I can't remember the last time I've seen a flea flicker executed like that. Like, I can't remember. Whereas then I expected it to, you know, amount to nothing.
Yeah, exactly the same. And then and as soon as you see the flea flicker, it just brings back memories of previous plays that McVeigh's obviously dialed up, and it always makes you think of back to the Wembley days, which was good. So flicking over to Facebook, we had a not a question, as it stated, from Tom Evans, more of an observation. In the past two games, if we are honest, we have only played one half of in brackets Super Bowl winning football, the first half against the Bucks. I think we have been lucky and have come up against a really bad QB in the previous game who couldn't put together a game-winning drive. We need to play the whole Super Bowl like the first half against the Bucks, or I reckon we might be in a spot of bother. Also, stop using timeouts at the wrong time. As you can tell, I'm a Tottenham fan and a little bit of pessimism. Keep up the good work. Andy, do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, you know, we are going to have to step up on the game. You know, I think as much as people are probably thinking it's the Bengals, we should, you know, it's not the Bengals team that we played a few years ago and kicked the living lumps out of them. These are a very good team, you know, and they've come from behind to beat the Chiefs. So, you know, I think it's year in, year out, the AFC favourite pretty much to get there. We can't take them lightly, and I think it's going to be an interesting game. But as I say, we do have to play that full game of football. As for the timeout stuff, it's kind of like Les Snead, I think. With, you know, I think I saw a meme of with, you know, the Les Snead thing, but instead of it being the picks, it was, you know, the timeouts. We don't need them. But I think that boils down to the amount of, you know, delayed game penalties we'd end up with if he didn't. And I think that is something that I think sometimes,
yeah,
you know, we do need to clean that up just a little bit. We do sail close to the wind a little bit on a few of them. But
you don't want it to come back to bite you, do you? No. I understand why he takes them, and it got mentioned during the game of why is he taking them, and it happens quite a lot. But John, it's, you can kind of see where people are coming from. Of, they do look sometimes you're doing it at the wrong time.
Yeah, it's fair points that are made up. Like Andy's saying, though, like if you don't call these timeouts, you then got delay a game, you know, and you know those 5 yards could be the difference in you making a first down or whatnot. So it's one of those ones, like, and you know, I know we used them up, but we showed we didn't need the timeouts, and you know, that's obviously, you know, the meme came from that, like, we don't need picks, we don't need timeouts, we don't need anything, we just need each other, we've got each other's back. Sneak out and do what we do, I guess. In terms of, you know, got to play for 60 minutes, yeah, absolutely, we do. But the one thing I will say with that is that whilst we, you know, you've got to play for 60 minutes, you look at a few of the games, you know, like it, holding out, even though the Bucks came back, yes, we held our nerve enough that all we had to do was get up the field and kick to win. You know, and the point I'm trying to make is football is, there's a lot of fine margins in football. That it's one of those ones, yeah, we've got to play for 60 minutes, but it's one of those ones, you know, if the Bengals are looking stronger than this, all we've got to do is just keep them within reach. Because when it comes to that fourth quarter, there's been quite a few times this season where Stafford's led us in a game-winning drive, or he's been absolute clutch and we've played great football in that fourth quarter. So it's one of those ones, if we can just kind of keep on the earth, you know, throughout those first 45 minutes, we could come on our own game in those final 15 minutes where it will really count. It's one of those ones, as we've seen in Super Bowls over the last kind of like few years, the game isn't won until the clock reaches zero.
Definitely. And we'll obviously go through into the Super Bowl, like I say, when we get back onto the pod next week, and it will be a super bonanza pod, as there may be quite a few of us on it next week, and all putting our tempi into the hat. And you've obviously got to look at it, and you say there in relation to the fourth quarter, we're in our house. So that can only be on a benefit. And one of the other news stories that obviously came out that I never mentioned, obviously, that it does actually seem like we're going to be in the home dressing room, and the Bengals will be using the Chargers dressing room. So again, that has got to be something else that we've got to put into the pot to help us through. And like I say, there's been a couple of questions that have actually come in relation to the Super Bowl, one on Twitter from Cooper Van Cup, and then one on Facebook from Mark Rebago, which we'll put a pin in at the minute. I have made a note of those, so that we will answer them in next week's pod on questions of how we're going to be watching and potential defensive plans. But we will answer those. But the final question that we're going to look at this week is from Josh Broomfield on Twitter. And Andy, the question he's asked is, who is your favourite underrated player from the game on Sunday?
Oh, that's a difficult one, to be honest. I'm probably going to go with, to be honest, Ernest Jones. He's come back from injury, stepped straight back in, and, you know, he quietly got the job done. Yeah, he wasn't flashy like Traven Howard or the big hit like, you know, Nick the Brick Scott is what I'm calling him. He just came in and did his job. You know, for a young rookie who's come in, especially after an injury, you know, he just came in and, again, did his job. You know, so for him, for me, yeah, I'd probably say it'd be him.
Okay. John?
Blanton. Yeah. Like, as you guys said earlier on the podcast, we'd only had two tight ends suited up and we lost our starting tight end. It was all on him. If Blanton, you know, got hurt, we didn't have a tight end and we were going to have to shift someone else into a role that they don't play. So he, it was basically every snap was on him on offense. So like, yeah, it's him for me.
I'm going to answer this one slightly differently because he, for me, he can be classed as underrated, but actually when you look at his CV, he probably shouldn't be. But Eric Weddle, for me, to do what he's doing and done with 2 years out of the game, to also be mic'd up for this game, which we've obviously potentially seen the footage of as well, and the hype that he had, is just an unbelievable feat to do what he's doing. And he's 37 years of age. I'm slight about the same age or slightly older. Like you say, it's just shows the sort of eye of the tiger, effectively, of what we are going for to do in this game. And one other person I just want to mention, it's completely off piece, but there was also someone else that came back into this game whose name never got mentioned at all, pretty much during the coverage, was Andrew Whitworth. And I think that shows how good he is because he wasn't needed to be mentioned.
Oh,
do you understand?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Big Wit was just Big Wit. It's just what you know, everybody expects.
And it's now the Wit Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know. for nobody else, we've got to win it, I feel, for him.
Just as soon as you mentioned, you said Weddle's name, Chris, it was just like, oh, my God, how could I forgot about Weddle? Weddle actually led us in tackling.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, for a guy who's like, he's his third game in 2 years, and when he was with us a few years ago, like, a lot of people said, like, nah, he's kind of, he's done. He's not the beard anymore. Like, the guy's, he's stayed in, like, phenomenal fitness and phenomenal shape, and he's been able to come in, pick up a plague book that'll be totally different from when he last seen it.
Oh, yeah.
And been able to perform, like, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, he's been phenomenal. Like, to have came out of, like, come off the couch, I guess.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Couch to Super Bowl program. Yeah. Is that the new fitness regime that's going to be out there?
I've not played football for the last, since just before Christmas, and I'm not quite sure I'm going to come back in the same shape as him. But no, we thank everybody, obviously, for the questions. Like I say, there's a couple there that we've put a pin in that we will obviously get back to them as we come into next week's podcast. Looking forward to the Super Bowl in our house. Couple of other things just to mention. You've seen, obviously, on the social medias that our LA Rams UK shop is now back live. New supplier. Fantastic bits of merchandise there available to purchase. We are now available to distribute worldwide. So you'll see the delivery options on there. So please have a look at that. There's some good options on there. I know the supplier personally. I've seen the garments. They are in good shape. And you also, there's another tweet and Facebook messages that have gone out this week as well, the Super Bowl programs. They are available. There's a potentially get them in before the Super Bowl, fingers crossed on the postage. But there is also opportunity where you can get your hands on that little bit of memorabilia and nostalgia to keep in there. So, as I say, we will look forward to next week. I think it's going to be a little bit of a long week because the adrenaline is going to build and build and build. So as a tweet came out earlier on this week, we can now make it show that we don't really care about the Pro Bowl. As if we were out of the game, obviously the Pro Bowl was the biggest game on TV. I couldn't care less, if I'm truthfully honest, about the Pro Bowl this week. But gentlemen, thank you for your time. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, if anyone hasn't seen it yet, go and watch Von Miller's tweet from yesterday. It's absolutely hilarious. Especially a certain coach playing a saxophone.
That's good stuff.
I'm going to say.
John? Yep.
No, I'm good. I'm actually now going to look up. Andy's just tricking me because I'm not seeing this. So.
Go look at it, people. Go look at it. But no, Andy, John, thank you for your time.
Yep, thanks for having us on again, Chris. And hopefully speak to you next week.
No, definitely will. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Stay safe. We will be back next week to speak about the Super Bowl in SoFi Stadium. Good night.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more, make sure you follow the guys on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Los Angeles Rams UK, or head to larams.uk for articles and merch.